Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, the business podcast for smart people who appreciate the insights found in a good conversation. That guy sitting at the end of the proverbial bar is your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone around here just calls him D. Fish. He's an author, speaker, and business coach. Basically, he's a professional talker. So grab a glass of your favorite beverage, grab a seat, and join us for today's episode. Let's see where the conversation takes us.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another interesting conversation with another interesting person. And today, playing the role of that interesting person is my friend, Danny Schumann. Danny is a brand storyteller, professional coach, and author of the book, The Worst Business Model in the World, a new kind of guide for the new kind of entrepreneur. He helps busy marketers untangle language, distill facts and data into clear and compelling stories, and create materials like videos and presentation books to help bring those stories to life. And by the way, he used to write commercials for Gatorade, and once Michael Jordan called him Peanut Butter Jelly Boy. I thought it was just me. Danny, welcome to the show.
Hello, sir. How are you?
You know, as always, I am living the dream. And at this point, I'd also mention our sponsor. We don't have one, so I'm just going to talk about the beautiful beer I'm drinking right now. I've been drinking Guinness on the show, Danny, and I know you're a big fan, as am I, but I didn't have any in the refrigerator today, so I'm drinking a Polliner Double Bock. It is a delicious dark beer. As I said, this is where we'd usually be mentioning our sponsor, which we don't have. So if you run a brewery, hey, if you work for Guinness and you want to get some press on a really cool, scrappy, can-do podcast, please reach out to me. We'd love to have you sponsor us. But anyways, Danny, I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
What is the worst business model in the world? And why is it so important that we have more people following that business model? I'm setting you up.
I love it. No, thank you. So the worst business model in the world actually is not a business model. It's more a way of thinking and a way of approaching the world. Mm-hmm. It's doing it in a way that doesn't necessarily put chasing the almighty dollar first, although making money is a big part of it. But what it really puts first is giving a person the ability to do what he or she enjoys, what they're good at, what they're passionate about, and what they care about, and helping them with the ability to do it on their own, on their terms, and still make a good living. And that's the people who it was originally designed for, entrepreneurs. Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. People like you and I.
Yeah.
And the fact that you wrote the book, and we've obviously had a number of conversations about this previously, but why do you think it was important to actually, you know, write a book and put this idea out there? Why hasn't it been more, you know, why is it kind of ignored in lieu of pursuit of the almighty dollar, as you say?
Well, I mean, business books, for the most part, start with things like putting together a business plan, which I'm not saying is a bad idea. But business books, for the most part, have been written from the perspective of, here are the steps with which you have a successful business. And not everybody thinks that way. You know, a lot of people don't think so linearly, necessarily. And sorry about that.
No, it's such a great idea. Boom! Yeah.
Not everybody thinks so linearly in such a linear fashion necessarily. And so the book was really designed in a way so that people don't need to read it from start to finish. You can bounce around, you can try chapter here, and then you can try chapter 16, and then chapter 2, and then chapter 7.
So I'm kind of picking up this idea, and I think that this is a really relevant idea to talk about, is that especially when you go into business for yourself, right? So really looking at this even from the perspective of kind of the solopreneur or the freelancer or the small business owner, somebody who's not trying to get the next Facebook. The idea that there can be goals, there can be structures within the business that are not just trying to, as you said, grow to get money. There's more to look at than just that. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, I always am hesitant to stake out this position because money is really, really important.
Right.
Yeah, and we know that it is, and I don't want to make it seem like money is not important, but I think what I'm suggesting is that it's not life in the service of money, but is that right? Am I saying that right? It's not trying to put money first and you having life come later. It's putting your life first and having money follow. Right. And money will follow. It's because it's really, it's about trying to place equal emphasis on happiness and money, and not necessarily putting yourself in a position where you're doing a lot of work to make good money, but really not happy or fulfilled.
Right. Well, and it's interesting because I think maybe the reason why you're a little hesitant to stake out the position, and something that I've definitely seen in the past too, is there is this line of thinking in the entrepreneurial space. And you've probably seen these on Facebook ads or LinkedIn, whatever. It's the just kind of dream big and make it happen and everything, you know, just pursue your bliss. Right. And there's, you know, how many people have just, you know, pursued their bliss into bankruptcy?
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you're saying, hey, money's important. Money's a big thing. It's just not the only thing. I mean, is that kind of, you know, I don't want to put,
yeah,
I would say, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I would say money is always important, because last time I checked, my bank doesn't take good intentions for the mortgage.
Not so much.
And my happiness for the mortgage. But if all I was trying to do was pay that mortgage, life would be a little empty. And I probably wouldn't be doing as good of work, I think, is maybe what you're arguing as well.
Well, that's another good point. I mean, I think part of being fulfilled is doing good work. And I talk to a lot of people, and I like to ask people, what percent of your job do you get enjoyment from? And what percent of your job do you get fulfillment from? And, you know, I'll talk to people who will just look at me straight in the face and say, probably about 5%. and I find that to be very sad for them. Like, you know, and they have made peace with that. And I don't think you should make peace with that. I think I don't think you should make peace with 5% being good enough.
I mean, heck, double it to 10, right? Go for it.
But then to your point about entrepreneurs, I mean, you know, it's really easy for entrepreneurs to not be responsible to themselves or their partners or their bank accounts. It's really easy mm-hmm. for entrepreneurs to get lost at home and wind up doing the laundry and going on errands instead of being accountable and responsible to the work that needs to be done. It's kind of comes with the territory. So, I mean, you know, I make clear in the worst business model in the world that you need to have diligence, and you need to, you know, you need to have diligence to yourself, however that, and there's a lot of different ways that I talk about that, but you need to be able to do that.
No, that makes sense. And one of the things that I've often shared is that a lot of people want to be, they want to work for themselves because they want the freedom and the flexibility and the control that it can offer. But what we often forget is the flip side of the coin of freedom is responsibility, of control is discipline, right? I mean, and when I say the same flip side of the coin, like, they're integral, right? You can't have that freedom without that discipline. I mean, one thing that has always been important to me, you know, if you ask me how much of my job I enjoyed, a pretty solid percentage, but definitely not all. And sometimes you have to do the things that aren't enjoyable, right? Because that brings the money in, right? Yes, we can definitely look at structures to delegate that or to outsource it. But I mean, and maybe this is where, I don't know where you're saying this, but the idea that you can only do stuff you like, I mean, there's very few people who can get away with that and still run a vibrant business.
Yeah.
You still got to sometimes take out the garbage, right? Sometimes you got to eat your peas.
Yeah, you got to eat your peas, and you got to, you know, eat peas that somebody else made for you too, that you might not like those peas. But, you know, maybe you could play with them in a way that you like, even as you're eating someone else's nasty peas. Yeah.
My mom's peas were not that bad.
I only ate peas with mashed potatoes and meatloaf.
Okay, now you're making me hungry here. So why do you think, and I mean, this is maybe even just outside of kind of what you talk about in the book, but where do you think this idea came from that entrepreneurship is really about just work, work, work? I mean, and this is not even on the, you know, kind of small business solopreneur level, but you definitely see this attitude, especially kind of maybe say, like, we're not that old, but like the younger generation, the new breed of entrepreneurs, where there's somehow this this badge of honor that, hey, I work 70 hours a week and I've got no life outside of getting my new website up and running and my app that's going to change the world. Like, where did that come from as a badge of honor?
Yeah, I that's a great question, because I'm not exactly sure where it came from. Although my guess is it came from Inc. Magazine and Entrepreneur Magazine. And I, you know, there's a, I'm really sorry about that. I thought you turned it off.
No worries.
But Inc. Magazine and Entrepreneur Magazine and stories of guys. I mean, I don't want to name names necessarily, but, you know, the entrepreneur of the year who took, you know, 1 2-day vacation in the past 3 hours and answers emails until 3 a.m. Like, those stories are great. You know, it's really cool to read those stories. And I think that those stories really spur people on, because, you know, there's a bunch of stories out there of people who did those crazy things and made a ton of money and got to be very successful. The challenge is in finding your own story and what works really well for you, because, like, how many other stories really are there? Like, out of, for every one of that person, how many other people are there that don't have that story?
You mean we can't all be Mark Cuban or Elon Musk or...
Yeah, I mean, we can be our own versions of it. And that's, I think that's, again, not to plug the book too much, but that's the theory behind the book. And that is, like, you need to create your own version of that story. And you need to be comfortable with that version, whatever that version of the story is that you are good with taking, with doing.
Right. Well, and I'm with you. I think one of the challenges is, to your point, those stories. And it's interesting you talk about Entrepreneur Inc. Or, I mean, heck, LinkedIn is full of, you know, the, what do they call it? Broetry, where it's right. Like, I was broke. Next sentence. I was living in my on the couch. I didn't know what my future was. And then it's, you know, but in 16 months I was making, you know, 7 figures a month.
Right.
And I think we want, it's almost like a religious promise, right? Where, yeah. Hey, here's your salvation. Just go and work really hard. It's like, you're not happy. You're not fulfilled. You don't know what the next step is in your life. Just go work really hard, inventing a new app, and you'll be successful. But what I think we often forget, you know, there's, you said it, there's a couple of them, but how many, we don't see all the people who worked themselves to death and got nothing, right?
No, nobody's really interested in those stories. Those aren't that great. You know, I just walked past WeWork in Fulton Market the other day, and on the outside of the building, it says hustle harder. And I'm not, you know, it's okay. Like, again, I'm not saying you should not work hard. I know you work hard. I know I work really hard, but it's not necessarily glorifying the idea of working harder than the next guy or more hours than somebody else.
Right.
Because that won't necessarily get you anywhere. It's the quality of the work that you put in, not the quantity.
Right. Well, I mean, we've definitely, you know, and me coming from a sales background, I think we've definitely fetishized hustle. You know, yeah. Fetishized the grind. You know, it was one of the great things when I had an opportunity starting in my 20s to kind of do some traveling globally, and, you know, going to other countries and realizing that not everybody looks at work the way Americans look at work. And hey, there's pluses and minuses. There's a reason we've got a huge economy and we've been responsible over the last 150 years for a lot of, you know, advancements in technology, all these kind of great things, but there's a cost, right?
Yeah.
I love the fact that in Europe, you know, when I think about my European clients and the business I do work with over there, it's like, I can't call them in August. They're not working. not a week in August, like August.
Yeah. I mean, my nephew who lives in Berlin says that when you go out, you know, in America, pretty much the first thing you ask someone is, what do you do for work? And then you talk for a while about work. He said, when they go out, they don't talk about work. It's not necessarily a subject that's desired to talk about or all that much interesting to people.
Yeah. And if you're talking about work, you must not have anything else interesting
to talk
about.
Yeah.
And you've said this a couple of times, and I don't think, I don't want to point this out in a negative way, but it's interesting that even you or I, who we're definitely kind of in this, hey, it's not just about hustle, it's about quality and you know, the value of what you're doing. We still kind of avoid just saying, hey, hustle is overrated, right? We want to be like, oh, no, it's okay. Work hard. It's work. And it's just interesting. I'm just paying attention to that, like we're still kind of, I don't know if you'd call it justification or rationalization.
Yeah.
And to say, you know what? Hustle is overrated.
Yeah. The hustle is stupid.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, and it's something you point out there, you and I are both hard workers. If we went to anywhere else in the world, they'd be like, holy cow, those guys are hard workers.
That's right. What's up with those guys? They won't stop working.
But even just the idea of saying, hey, let's be a little more nuanced or intentional about our work, we kind of have to, again, back up what we're saying. You can't just put it out there.
Yeah. Well, the other nice thing to consider, and this is a little, you know, worse business model-y, is that if I do my math right, there's 168 hours in the week.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So say you sleep like 8 hours a night. Let's say 7 hours a night. 7 days, it's about 50 hours. So that leaves you about 118 hours for the rest of the week. 118 hours mm-hmm. among those 7 days. Take a couple of those days away because it's the weekend, and then you're a little under 100 or 80 or 90. But still, there's a lot of time that you can use the way that you want to use it. And that's kind of, you know, so for people who work 9-to-5 jobs, it's a little tougher, but they still have hours that they can use the way that they want to use it. And so the beauty of life is like, listen, you want to take a couple hours to do this at this time? Go ahead and take a couple hours to do this at that time. You know, right. use the hours that you have the way that you see fit, not the way that somebody tells you you have to do it.
Yep. No, for sure. And that is, I think, that's hard for people sometimes, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, I wonder what drives that. Like that.
I think that we're very used to scheduling, being scheduled and regimented, being told what to do and when to do it.
So it's interesting. I just thought I thought school, right? Yeah. When I asked the question, I was like, oh, it's school. Like until you're what, 20? I mean, early 20s, you're
22. Kind
of told like what to do. Even college where you have some freedom, it's still like, hey, these are the things you should be doing, when you should be doing them. You know, like, oh, it's Thursday, you should be going out partying. Versus, right. I could see that.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that's why people who are homeschooled are like, have really interesting lives.
You know, that wouldn't surprise me. I mean, or just the idea of, I mean, and we got a new kid, so we'll see what kind of parent I really am. But, you know, one thing I remember growing up, and we definitely were involved in a lot of activities, but it wasn't like we were forced to. I wouldn't say that was like, you know, we didn't have all of our day mapped out for us, right? It was just kind of like, especially when I was younger, maybe before the age of 12 or 13, it was like, well, you just got to come home when I call you, when the sun's
up. Yeah.
And we've kind of, I think, gone the opposite direction from that.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking it kind of like prevents people from developing those skills, right?
Yeah. It's an interesting thought, like unstructured time versus structured time. And how much unstructured time do we really have? You know, how much time do we have to like walk in the woods and think deep thoughts versus, you know, being on email and texting, you know, mm-hmm. doing kind of mindless, repeatable tasks that don't get us very don't let us progress very far versus like, you know, taking a walk and like thinking about interesting things that might, you know, like might turn into big ideas that might help you or somebody else, you know, or change the way people think about something.
Right. No, for sure. What? So if somebody, let's say, doesn't have the time to go invent a time machine and go back to their youth,
yeah.
Have more unstructured time. what have you seen as an effective way to help people kind of start developing this mentality? Because I think it's interesting that you call the worst business model, it's not a business model, it's a mindset.
Yeah.
Mindset changes are always powerful, right? They're the framework we use to view the world, but that they're also really hard to change.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Have you seen anything that kind of helps people along that path? You know?
Yeah. I mean, you're going to think that I'm totally like have turned from Jekyll to Hyde or the other way around. But the thing that I've seen that helps is actually scheduling that time. It's like making time to like putting it on your calendar, you know, from 2 to 4 today, like blocking it out and saying that time is, set aside for unstructured time. That time is set aside for me to, seriously, to like walk out into the woods, you know.
I'm with you.
The dog, to, you know, to take a run, to meditate, to, you know, go out in a boat and cast your fishing line, to like, you know, dance, practice, or play chess, or whatever, you know, whatever it is. It's like, put it on the calendar, especially for people who aren't told, like entrepreneurs, of when they need to do certain things. Right. To put something like that on a calendar sounds kind of counterintuitive, but it's so helpful.
Hey, what goes on my calendar gets done, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's one, you know, that's I think the best way, because otherwise you're just sitting there staring at your computer trying to figure out, you know, how many emails you can answer in the next however many minutes.
Right. Right. Well, it's just about prioritization. You know, what are you going to prioritize? And are you prioritizing it to enough of a level that you can put it in your calendar?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a big list maker too. I don't know about you. Are you a list maker? I mean,
I got, you can't see it on the podcast, but yeah, here's one of the ones I'm working on today. Yeah.
I saw it. Yes. I saw the list. Yes. I'm super analog-y. I was looking for my list, but yes, my list looks like the musings of a 12-year-old. Cause it's just like stuff scratched out all over the place. But you know, sometimes it takes diligence to be able to have unstructuredness, I guess.
Well, I mean, think about any good jazz musician. You know, you've got to learn the structure before you can ignore the structure.
Yeah. The thing we used to say when I was a creative on the agency side, I used to say, you need a really good box to think out of.
Right.
You know, you need like a good strategy. Like, what's the foundation? You know, no creative person wants to be given a truly blank canvas. You know, you want a little bit of parameters or direction so that you can like achieve, you know, you can do it right, so to speak, or at least do it in a way that meets someone's expectations.
Well, you know, they say constraints are actually one of the best ways to drive creativity. If you're just given a completely blank slate, you're kind of in trouble. But you start, here's some parameters. You got to try this. You got to fit it within this. Or even, hey, yeah. I think it's one of the reasons why, in some ways, being that scrappy entrepreneur, you can kind of make better work. You can't just throw money at it, right?
Yeah.
It's like, all right, you wanna do this podcast? You don't have a fancy studio. You got about $80 worth of equipment that you bought on Amazon, and go.
Yeah, but you got good beer. I mean, what's really important?
Well, see, that's a trick. You always gotta start with the foundation, like you said.
There you go.
Got some good beer.
What better foundation is there than good beer?
Right. So, and I wanted to ask you about that. So you're a Guinness fan as well. Is that correct?
I am. I mean, I'm a sucker for, like, you know, Guinness. I don't know the technicalness of it, but like when it's pulled out of a nitrousy tap or whatever, like at a bar.
Yeah, the Cascade.
Oh. Yeah. The Cascade. I could just watch it for hours. You know, it's tumbles down the glass, and I love the temperature. I love a good old English bitter temperature, you know, not too cold.
Not too warm, not too cold. Just
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Have summer. You ever been to Ireland and had the Guinness over there?
Yes. And yes, I guess I have. I've been to Ireland, and I think I had Guinness when I was in England, and I have been to Ireland, but I'd not get to do the Guinness tour. It was not meant to be.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Guinness tour, I'm not saying that I've been on it multiple times. let's just admit it. I've been on the Guinness tour multiple times. I didn't know why I was trying to hide my preferences concerning the podcast is called Beer, Beats, and Business. It's a really cool tour, actually. And it's kind of different because, it's not like a guided tour. It's more like a museum because it's a big place. And when, Diageo bought them, I think they also put some money into it. But the best part of that tour is that you get a free pint of Guinness, and you get it in the bar at the end of the tour, which is on the 6th floor of the brewery, and it's got a full 360 glass surround. So you basically look, and it's one of the 6 stories may not sound like a lot, but it's one of the taller buildings in Dublin.
Amazing.
So at a, I was there once when it was a foggy day, couldn't see anything, but I was there once on a clear day. It was so cool. And
I would imagine it's like the most perfect Guinness ever.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's so good over there. I converted my wife when she was with me. It's funny you talk about the Cascade because they pour it right over there. So like they pour half of it and then they, you know, put it on the bar and they come back 2 minutes later. But on a night you'll see just like a line of 10 or 12 pine glasses. And they're all at various stages of that Cascade.
That's so awesome.
I highly recommend if you get a chance.
I might just kind of see what's going on with flights when I get off this podcast.
There you go. Are you any other fun beers you're drinking lately?
You know, I would say that there maybe isn't any. I mean, I'll tell you one beer I do like because I like the story of the, and I don't, is it New Glarus? New Glarus. I don't even know. The Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
Wisconsin only beers. Like
I'm
a branding guy and a marketing guy. So I love when a brand creates a mystique around itself. And so New Glarus has kind of said, you know what, Wisconsin only, you guys want to come across the border to buy some, feel free. You can bring it back to Illinois or wherever else you live. But we're only selling it here in Wisconsin. So it's kind of like, it's like bubble yum back in the 70s or whatever.
Right.
That old, like, you know, when it's something is more exclusive, people want it more, or when it's less easy to get. So like, and I like the beer too. I have to say, I like the Spotted Cow. It's a classic. Right. And the Nearly Naked Lager, you know, I think that your listeners are probably thinking, man, what a boring beer drinker. And that's kind of true.
No, the boring, which that's like, why, how boring? He only likes the really good stuff. No, I grew up in Wisconsin, so no New Glarus. I actually tried to go visit the brewery once and got there 20 minutes after it closed. It was very disheartening.
That makes me sad.
I like the idea of, as you said, kind of exclusivity, or just, it's why I actually drink Yingling whenever I'm on the East Coast. And Yingling's a perfectly fine beer. I'm not going to say it's like the best beer ever, but it's good. And especially if it's like a warmer day or something, it's a nice lager. But I just love going to a place and going, oh, I can't get that back home. Like, I gotta get one.
Gotta get it here. Yeah, totally. And plus you get to say Yingling.
It's just a fun thing to say. Not fun to try to spell.
No.
I'm not sure exactly.
There's a lot of vowels. Excessive.
Yeah. There's a U in there and an E. Might be an umlaut or.
Oh yeah. Or something. That's a good reason just there, right there, to drink a beer with an umlaut.
Well, I think this Paulaner might have had one, or some of those German beers. They definitely.
St. Pauli girl might have.
No, Paulaner, not St. Pauli. Paulaner. No. So it's definitely a German beer, but there are definitely some of those, you know, here in Chicago, if you go to Lincoln Square is a neighborhood where a lot of the old German restaurants and stuff, and they'll have, you know, the full tap of German beers, and I can only maybe pronounce half of them.
Yeah. Like, but drink all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, that's another place. Kind of like when I order at Asian restaurants where you just kind of point at stuff.
Point. I'll take that. Yeah. That looks good.
That looks good. It's the same thing. I'm like, that one there. No, to the left. Yeah. Just give me that one.
That one with a long name.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, hey, you know what? This has been a blast. I think it sounds like
it has.
A good place Thank you. For us to wrap things up so we can go and get those Guinnesses. Awesome. It's not Guinness. Me and my brother-in-law once tried to figure out the plural of Guinness. It is Guinnesses, not Guinness.
It's Guinnesses. All right. Good to know.
But Danny, what's a good way if somebody wanted to follow up with you? What's a good way for them to get in touch?
You can find me at twistyourthinking.com. That's three words mushed into one. Twistyourthinking, twistyourthinking.com.
Love it. And remember, if you know of a brewery that would like to sponsor Beer, Beats, and Business, please reach out and we can talk all about how delicious your beer is. Can my love be bought with free beer? So look forward to having you on for our next episode. Have a great day. Bye.
Thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. We all know the best way to find out about a new podcast is through our friends. So please help us out and share what we're doing through social media, or just tell someone. And if you could do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Stitcher, that would be great. Want to get in on the conversation? Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.